You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the Marijuana Agenda. I'm your host, Russ Belville, and we've got a packed show for you today. Coming up in the cannabis headline news, we'll talk about Donald Trump defending his invitation to the murderous Philippine drug war president Duterte. We'll also get into our first episode of A Sensible Future, brought to you by Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We've got Stacia Costner, the deputy director of SSDP, joining us to talk about the history of the organization. In our drug war data mining, I'll take a look at new figures from Colorado showing fewer people being busted for DUI for marijuana and why the cops are freaking out about that. We've got another edition of Northwest Cannabis Chronicle with part two of our Henry Rollins keynote speech from the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. And then in the Radical Rant, we'll have time to talk about a bunch of guys that can't understand that cannabis beats opiate addiction. They just can't understand the basic facts that science are laying out for them. But before we get to all that, we'll start off with the cannabis headline news. And of course, in hour two, in Toker Talk Radio, we'll tackle even more happening in the world of marijuana, including some stupid stoner stories to start off the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House. Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb and licensed by the City of Portland.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. U.S. President Donald Trump underscored his eagerness to meet with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte despite international condemnation of the Asian leader's violent crackdown on drug addicts and dealers. A White House statement after the April 29th call said the two leaders discussed, quote, the fact that the Philippine government is fighting very hard to rid its country of drugs, end quote. Duterte first gained global prominence as well as criticism for his aggressive and violent war on drugs as mayor of Davao City. Human rights groups say that as president, his narcotics crackdown has led to more than 7,000 extrajudicial killings. Quote, he's been very, very tough on that drug problem, but he has a massive drug problem, end quote, Trump said in the interview. Governor Chris Christie on Monday attacked supporters of legalizing marijuana as, quote, crazy liberals who are willing to, quote, poison our kids for the tax revenue, even as he suggested the state's next governor could make the issue a top agenda item. The governor cited statistics, without attaching a source, that he said show teenage marijuana users are 10 times more likely to become heroin addicts by the age of 24. Such gateway drug research has been dismissed by the National Institute of Medicine as far back as 1999. A budget deal moving through the Colorado legislature would increase recreational marijuana taxes to 15%, the maximum allowed by voters with the passage of Proposition AA. The current tax on recreational pot is 10%, and lawmakers eliminated a scheduled decrease for July 1st to balance the budget. The new marijuana money would enable Republicans to secure a cut to the business personal property tax they've been seeking for years and would also provide money for rural schools, though the exact amounts remain uncertain. These are two uses that diverge sharply from what the voters initially approved. In other Colorado legislative news, the so-called marijuana sanctuary state bill has died while the plan to protect recreational pot providers from the Trump administration has moved ahead. The Senate Judiciary Committee killed a bill that would have prevented public employees from assisting federal agents in arresting a Colorado citizen for committing an act that is a Colorado constitutional right, as using, producing, and selling marijuana is in the state. Meanwhile, the House Finance Committee approved bills to allow marijuana businesses to reclassify their recreational inventory as medical cannabis if federal enforcement policy changes and to seal previous convictions that preceded legalization. The Vermont House of Representatives has two marijuana legalization bills on its Tuesday agenda, one non-commercial approach that removes penalties for possession and home cultivation, and another that would create a legal and tax system of sales, which also allows home grow. Yesterday, the Vermont House approved a bill to add PTSD, Crohn's disease, and Parkinson's disease as medical cannabis qualifying conditions, increase the number of dispensaries, and allow patients to grow their own medicine without giving up the right to purchase cannabis from dispensaries. Canadian oil company CEOs fear their costs will rise when the federal government passes recently introduced legislation to legalize recreational marijuana. Precision Drilling CEO Kevin Nevo, whose Calgary-based firm operates in both Canada and the United States, says his opposition to legalization is supported by his company's experience in Colorado after that state legalized marijuana in 2012. He said costs there have increased for employees who need drug counseling or for those who fail drug tests and must be sent home under Precision's zero-tolerance drug and alcohol policy. And it's more difficult to find new recruits, typically young men, who can pass pre-employment drug tests, he said. Marijuana decriminalization is one step closer to passage in New Hampshire after lawmakers worked out a compromise that police chiefs can stomach. An amendment by Republican Senator Jeb Bradley would remove criminal penalties for possessing up to 3/4 of an ounce of marijuana, less than the original bill's 1 ounce threshold. New Hampshire is the only New England state without marijuana decriminalization. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from the SilverTour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The marijuana agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belleville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle from the Marijuana Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is A Sensible Future, brought to you by Students for Sensible Drug Policy at ssdp.org. Drug policy is an issue that primarily affects the young, both in terms of use and legal prosecution. SSDP believes in honest education about drugs and advocates for harm reduction policies to protect young adults and society at large. We speak with another dedicated activist from SSDP, working toward a sensible future.
Welcome to A Sensible Future. We are producing in a partnership with Students for Sensible Drug Policy. I'm Russ Belleville. Welcome to the podcast. And joining us for this episode, we have Stacia Costner. She's the Deputy Director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and you can find more at ssdp.org. Stacia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for having me.
Students for Sensible Drug Policy is one of my favorite reform organizations because it takes young and idealistic kids. I mean, I'm almost 50, so I can say kids, I suppose, but young adults who are in college and even in some other student situations. Tell folks about SSDP just in general. Who's involved and how can they get involved?
Sure. So Students for Sensible Drug Policy is a grassroots network of students dedicated to ending the war on drugs. We were founded in 1998, and today in 2017, we have presence on about 300 campuses across most U.S. states and in 20 countries abroad.
So is it just at the university or college level, or are there some high school students involved?
Mostly at the university and college level, but we do have a handful of really awesome rock star high school chapters that are, you know, in my opinion, ahead of their time and that have found us early. So we definitely have a presence on a few high school campuses as well.
How about at the postgrad level, like perhaps law schools or anything like that? Any SSDP chapters there?
Yeah, we've got probably around 10 or a dozen law school chapters. You know, it's a natural fit for people that get into law because they're interested in criminal justice or drug law. So we have a bunch of chapters. Their involvement looks a little bit different than an undergrad chapter, but we definitely have a lot of law schools. We have, I think we have one medical school and a few other grad schools that we're active on as well.
Well, that's fantastic. And to be clear, so everyone understands, of course, this podcast is a part of the Marijuana Agenda podcast, but your mission is broader than just the prohibition of marijuana. Can you explain a little?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the genesis of Students for Sensible Drug Policy was back in 1998. The Higher Education Act aid elimination penalty was introduced. And that meant that any student that was convicted of any drug crime, whether it was a misdemeanor or a felony, whether it happened before they enrolled in college or while they were enrolled in college, would be automatically ineligible for federal financial aid. And so, you know, students of the time saw that as a, you know, really direct affront to students' rights coming from the drug war. So they decided to band together and start to do something about it. Of course, you know, Normal has been around since the 70s, and there were Normal chapters back in the late 90s. But, you know, our founders really wanted, you know, our core issue and our focus to be a bit wider than just marijuana. They saw, you know, that this would impact people who had other kind of drug charges as well, you know, saw the drug war as a failure as a whole, rather than just focusing on one aspect of that, which is, of course, marijuana.
A much broader focus and born out of a particular issue dealing with that Higher Education Act. What are some of the more modern issues that SSDP is having to deal with, especially now that we have the new administration in play?
Yeah, you know, things are definitely still changing at a rapid pace. And, you know, it's not entirely clear to us what our specific targets are going to be yet with this new administration. But of course, there's, you know, just generally the idea that Jeff Sessions is, you know, really committed to a law and order type of approach, a punitive type of approach. We're about, you know, looking at drug use and drug policy through a public health lens and not a criminal justice lens. And it seems that the people who, you know, are at the top of this issue in the federal government, such as Jeff Sessions, you know, really see the way to deal with people using drugs by just locking them up and putting them behind bars. And of course, we don't think that that is very effective. You know, that's the approach that has been used since the 70s when Richard Nixon launched the war on drugs. And it, you know, hasn't done much to prevent people from accessing drugs or to prevent the harm caused by drugs or drug prohibition. So we think an alternative approach is probably the better way to go, and just trying to, you know, generally focus public opinion on aligning behind our sort of values on this issue rather than the prohibitionist punitive values.
So SSDP is formed in 1998. You're creeping up on 20 years, two decades almost in drug policy advocacy. Take us through the early years at SSDP. Who was involved and what were some of the major milestones in the development of the organization?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So this was even before my time, back in 1996, 1997. Some people might be familiar with the Drug Reform Coordination Network, DRCNet. So DRCNet had a early internet discussion page or forum, you know, with people that were working on drug policy reform. And then Adam Smith, who is one of our early co-founders, noticed that there was a lot of .u email addresses on that list. And he decided that, you know, there are, you know, unique ways students can be organizing around any issue, and especially this issue. So he pulled out all of those EU email addresses and created a separate list for, you know, what they called at the time, the student drug reform movement. So that started in the, you know, late 90s, and then more and more actions started springing up on campuses protesting the Higher Education Act, the elimination penalty. And then this led to our first conference, which was held in Washington, D.C. in, let's see, 1998 it would have been. And the attendees decided to form SSDP into a national organization and elect board of directors that had one representative from each of the five schools that we were active on at the time. And so that those five schools were definitely American University, Rochester Institute of Technology, of course, let's see, Hampshire College, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and George Washington University. So that that was sort of the core group that first got us started. And, you know, our early years were really focused on the Higher Education Act elimination penalty. There was, you know, a famous drug warrior in Congress, Mark Sauder, who sort of became our mortal enemy. And, you know, we would go to events that he was at and sort of confront him about this issue and do sort of like on the ground events like that. And then I would say in the mid 2000s or so, a lot of, you know, marijuana law reform opportunities started to spring up. So that became a big focus of ours. And then, you know, of course, through all of the years, generally organizing students, informing them of their rights, raising awareness about failures of the drug war and about ways that, you know, a harm reduction approach could have been taken. And so I would say that that's probably a big change that I've noticed is that, you know, we've moved from, let's see, from focusing on things like financial aid and marijuana law reform to things that are, what's the word I'm looking for, maybe a little bit more progressive, a little bit more radical, things like needle exchange and naloxone, which is an overdose reversal drug, and psychedelics and psychedelic harm reduction and things like that. So it's really interesting. I got involved about 11 years ago when things were really marijuana-centric, and then today things are a lot less marijuana-centric, although, you know, it's the beast that just refuses to die, this marijuana prohibition. So there's, of course, a lot of work still left to do and a lot of interesting opportunities on campuses where, you know, state law, for example, if you're on a campus in California, you know, state law says that it's not a crime to possess marijuana or to use it in the privacy, you know, of your home, but on campus, it's not permitted. So people are still getting in trouble for doing something that is legal in that state. So our students are really exploring, you know, those campus policies and what things are standing in the way there, what, you know, sort of elements the administrations are concerned with, trying to, you know, reset some of their misconceptions about what their policies can and can't do under federal law.
One of the other aspects I really appreciate about Students for Sensible Drug Policy is it's almost like a boot camp, a training ground for the people who become the activists of the future. Give us a few of your alumni stories, some alumni who have moved on to continue in the industry side of things as well as the advocacy side of things.
Sure. Yeah, I'm, you know, I manage our alumni association program, and I am so, so proud of so many of our alums working in like really diverse fields, both related to drug policy and marijuana and not at all. But relating to the marijuana industry, I'll start there first. Probably our biggest success story there would be Sean Luce, who is the chief operating officer for Berkeley Patients Group, one of the oldest and largest cannabis dispensaries in California. So, you know, he came through SSDP in like 2002 or so, and, you know, really was able to take the training, knowledge, and connections that he gained through SSDP and help turn that into a thriving business. On the advocacy side, we have Tom Angel, of course, who runs Marijuana Majority and also produces the Marijuana Moment and writes for Massroots. He, you know, is responsible for culling together all of this, you know, marijuana news developments, which are happening on a daily basis in so many different places, and, you know, pulling that together and drawing our attention to, you know, the most important among them and, you know, breaking marijuana news stories and just being a really genius media expert on the issue. And then sort of in between those two, we have Troy Dayton, who's the CEO of the ArcView Group, which is a marijuana investor network. You know, we have people in those types of fields. We have Shalene Keitel, who is the founder of THC Staffing Group, which is, you know, a cannabis industry staffing firm. She also does a lot of other work for, you know, around issues of equality and, you know, racial justice and, things of that nature with her work with the Minority Cannabis Business Association. You know, we've got just a ton of alums all over the country, the world even, doing some really, really interesting work, like really on all aspects of this issue and of the industry.
You've learned a ton about the history of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. I encourage everyone to check out the website at ssdp.org to find the chapter nearest you. And Stacia, like you mentioned, you formed in 1998. That means 2018's coming up. It'll be the 20th anniversary of SSDP. Let's look to the future. What can people expect for 2018 as far as conferences and other events?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as you mentioned, I mean, it is our 20th anniversary next year. It's a big deal for us, for sure. So we just announced that our 2018 conference will be March 2nd through the 5th in Baltimore, Maryland. We're going to do a lobby day in conjunction with that. So, you know, after the weekend of the conference, we'll bus everybody down to Washington, D.C. to meet with their elected officials, you know, about a policy issue that relates to drug policy reform, of course. So that's probably our biggest event. Of course, we'll also have some fundraisers and smaller events throughout the year. You know, we'll be releasing a new website very, very soon, and hopefully some other you know, branding changes like that in the works, and, you know, just expanding and firming up our presence on our 300 plus campuses across the U.S. and abroad. And, you know, I'm excited to see the work that our students are going to do this year and in our 20th year.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Stacia Costner, the Deputy Director from Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and did you say Alumni Director? Is that the correct title?
Sure.
Oh, and Alumni Director. Stacia Costner, thanks for joining us here on A Sensible Future.
Thank you, Russ.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaman Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
So I read this story at the Denver Post that presented three interesting statistics about the state of Colorado. Number one, the number of citations for driving while under the influence of marijuana dropped by 33.2%. About a third. Two, 50% of marijuana users say they have driven high. And three, 55% of marijuana users said they believed it was safe to drive while under the influence. So these facts led a Department of Transportation spokesman to remark, "We're still troubled by the fact that marijuana users are still telling us they routinely drive high." Well, why? Aren't a third fewer citations for marijuana DUIs a good thing? Consider that if number two is true, then if number one is also true, doesn't that argue that number three might be truer than presumed? It might be safer to drive under the influence than presumed. A spokesman for the State Patrol even inadvertently underscored this point. The Denver Post reported him explaining that troopers have great experience busting stone drivers, through personal contact and driving behavior. Okay, so if police are great at busting stone drivers, but they're busting fewer of them, if the tokers are driving high and the cops are catching fewer of them, again, what is the problem? This scaremongering about marijuana and driving seems to be based on the idea that legalization invents stoned drivers. Don't you think if stoned driving were a real problem, we'd have seen a huge spike in traffic fatalities around 1979 when we recorded the greatest rate of lifetime teenage marijuana use? Or maybe 1996 when California passed the Compassionate Use Act? Or perhaps 2012 when Washington and Colorado legalized adult use? But instead, we've seen traffic fatality rates decline by 38% in the past two decades. Yes, yes, much of that decline owes to safer cars and roads and laws. But marijuana doesn't seem to be making the roads any more dangerous. Well, while the critics of legalization will try to gin up some danger by reeling off these trumped-up statistics about marijuana-related crashes or fatalities. But marijuana-related means we found evidence proving the driver was a marijuana user. Not that the driver had recently used marijuana, or that the impairment from marijuana's active ingredient, THC, was in any way to blame for the crash. Inactive THC metabolites proving marijuana use remain detectable for days or weeks. So, if you legalize marijuana, and more adults are using it more often, you're going to find more dead drivers with metabolites in their systems. And that's about as relevant as noting how many more married gay people are dying in car crashes these days since the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage. Now, this isn't to argue that people should do bong rips down the freeway. Marijuana use can and does impair important driving skills in infrequent users. But the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration confirms that, controlling for age and gender, THC-positive drivers are no more statistically likely to crash than sober drivers. Even the FDA's approved synthetic THC medicine, Marinol, or dronabinol, comes with a label that warns its users not to drive, and that it says specifically should be warned not to drive until it is established that they are able to tolerate the drug. Well, frequent marijuana consumers do develop this tolerance. Take Addie Norton. She was profiled in a Washington State local TV news story about marijuana and driving. She showed up and aced the driving test at 3 times the legal limit for active THC. She reached 11 times the legal limit before the state trooper observing the test said she was driving borderline. At 11 times the legal limit for alcohol, she'd be dead. Troopers want some sort of breathalyzer for marijuana, but that won't work. The same amount of THC that doesn't faze a frequent consumer would leave a newbie drooling on the couch. Cops only want the breathalyzer because, obviously, tokers aren't driving and acting erratically enough to catch them without it. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle, part 2 of the Henry Rollins keynote.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Welcome to the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle, brought to you by the Marijuana Business Association at mjba.net, the fastest growing cannabis business alliance in America. Today, we catch you up on the latest news and speak with an expert from Cascadia Bioregion of the Pacific Northwest, consisting of the legal marijuana states of Oregon, Washington, and Alaska. Fill your coffee and grab an umbrella. It's time for the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle.
Once again, we go back to the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference that took place last Friday, and more highlights from a keynote speech delivered by legendary punk icon Henry Rollins, who doesn't smoke cannabis, but wants to see it legal for everyone else.
If I was an entrepreneur looking to sell, I want to be selling to every single person in my town. I'd want to make money. And so my strategy would be not great discounts, it would be great social outreach. Great education. I would treat my dispensary or my store like a microbrewery where I love every single drop of the product that I'm making. I love every single ounce or gram that I am selling. During the time I was in Denver, Colorado, working on the History Channel show, we were allowed to go into a grow facility the size of a freaking Walmart. It was insane. It went from here to your house with a roof over it. And the scientist who's been working on cannabis since he was in college, they are cloning his strain in this building. Every single plant had a government barcode. Inspectors are in there all the time looking for any bits of detritus that had fallen on the ground. Like, that's a leaf. What's that doing there? The standards were very high. It took him about 3 hours for him to walk us through how they grow cannabis in this facility. These lights go on for 3 hours, and this solution is in the hydroponic pools. It is drained. Another solution goes in. A different light goes on for an hour and a half. It was incredible. And we walked through the guts of this machine all the way to the end, where there's a bunch of really friendly people in really comfortable chairs clipping the leaves off buds to package them, put them into the armored truck to go to their dispensary. It was all contained. And so we went from the grow facility, which was fascinating, and we went to the place where they sell. And we got there early, because we're History Channel, we need to light the room and film it. So we got there at some ridiculous hour of the morning before it was open, and we met the staff. So I said, treat me as a customer. I'm new at this. What do I want? And they go like, okay, well, you might not want to try this. It's very hallucinatory. It's kind of not good for a beginner. Maybe we would steer you towards this. Every single person in that shop was completely knowledgeable about every single product they sold. A wonderful, friendly, charismatic, bow-tied man greeted you at the door and brings you in, and you are taken to a helpful person who advises you. We interview these people for quite a while. And so as the camera people are rolling up their gear, I'm standing outside waiting to go to the next place. And as the place is opening, a line is developing, waiting to go in. And this is one of the best things I saw. The line was an elderly couple. The line had a businessman checking his BlackBerry. I'm not making this up. This was real. The elderly couple, there's a businessman in his power suit, and there was a student on his bike. Basically, I'm looking at every single possible demographic in this city, and you see how many people use cannabis. The elderly, the business guy, these are not evil people. This is real people. This is America, if you will. And that's when it hit me, what is at stake going forward? Because if these people are showing up in Colorado, these people will want to show up in Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, Florida, South Carolina, et cetera, et cetera. And it was a fascinating look at who really uses cannabis in this country. Report cards from legal states need to be so overwhelmingly good that people start petitioning their governments, their state governments, like the Midwest, to me, is the nut to crack. As soon as these Midwest states start getting so many people writing petitions and imploring their government to go legal for cannabis, it's going to be because so many good report cards are coming from the legal states. I would love to see Oregon be leading that, because you are so pure to begin with. The state is one huge postcard for beauty and ecological health. And this is what I think is important going forward, because like I said, we're moving history forward. We are moving civil rights forward. We are moving culture forward. Yes, there's money, but to me, there's something much bigger at stake. There's overturning racism and bigotry. And you can't have that conversation without talking about cannabis, because cannabis has been used as a thing to grind brown people, black people, poor people into the dirt for damn near a century in this country. And that's what I think is so important, because the rest of the day, people are going to be talking to you about more facts and figures. I wanted to come in and talk to you more from the hearts and minds point of view. And obviously, I feel very passionate about this. When I got into music, I started touring America. I've met more Americans than any president, and I'm not trying to impress you. I've shook more hands than anyone you've ever met. It's my line of work. I meet a lot of people, and sometimes they're waiting for me in my driveway. It's a little intense. But I've met so many wonderful people in this country. And as I said in my columns in the LA Weekly, I said a couple of weeks ago, it's a country full of really nice people. It's just not that nice a place. I think we need to start working on that. And I think it happens in this century, and because this is the only century you and I have. And I think cannabis legalization going forward is a huge proponent of that. How you are with people in your locality is going to be very important for your economic well-being and for the well-being of this country. So what I'm saying is, it's way bigger than just a store and incoming. They fear cannabis users because it makes you think. It makes you be introspective, and you might start questioning your government. A long time ago, I had a TV show on the Independent Film Channel, and I interviewed Samuel Jackson, the great actor. And I didn't want to ask him about what it was like working with Quentin Tarantino for the millionth time. So I did a lot of research on him, and I found out that he was friends with a lot of the famous Black Panthers, that he was an usher in Martin Luther King's funeral, and that he was a real part of the civil rights movement. So when I met him, I said, "Can we talk about you being friends with a Huey Newton?" And he went, "Yeah." And we spent the whole hour talking about that. And he said something really interesting. He said, "We all used to smoke weed. And one day, where we live, there was no more weed. And all of a sudden, all you could buy was heroin. It was like one day, boom, cannabis gone, heroin in." So I said, "You didn't start using heroin, did you?" He said, "Of course we did." And they all became hooked. And that was Hoover. That was COINTELPRO. I remember in the 1980s, when I was in Black Flag living in Los Angeles, we would leave on these massive tours, like multiple fiscal quarters at a time, and come back ragged. And we'd come back and go to the local wherever and hang out and find out what had been happening since we had been gone. And it was usually bad news. He's dead. She's dead. And it was from crystal meth, it was from heroin, overdosing, suicide, just beautiful young people dying. And I remember right around 1983, you could almost trip over bags of heroin on the streets of Hollywood. Yes, I'm exaggerating a little, but not too much. You'd eat at Denny's, "Would you like a side of heroin? How much? It's only $1.75. And I talked to people who would tell me and my girlfriend, we've been trying heroin for the last 6 weeks. I mean, we're not addicted. We're just checking it out. I'm like, "Why are you trying heroin?" "Because our weed dealers now have heroin too. And they're giving us a discount. In fact, they gave us our first three doses for free." And that's when I realized that they are trying to kill us. And I was 23 at the time. It was like 1984, right around the time I read Howl by Allen Ginsberg, one of the greatest pieces of American literature. I went, wait a minute, this is us. We are being predated upon. They are hunting us down and killing us so they can go to the LA Times and say, see, that's what they do. They do heroin and they overdose in bathtubs. They're disgusting and they need to be put in prison. And that's when it really opened my eyes to the scam of law enforcement in this country and how, and this is the war on drugs. This is your pal Ronald Reagan. I think the war on drugs started with Nixon, but it was Ronald Reagan who really made it a thing. And that was a part of it. So as far as angering people that we are pro-cannabis, basically pro-science, pro-intellect, pro-progress. You think you're not pissing people off? Like I said 30 minutes ago, you are going up against the prison industrial complex, law enforcement in any state, big pharma, and big agriculture. You're going up against some of the mightiest money-making forces in this country with your humble cannabis store. And that's why you need to be really cool and really smart and really dig the people in your community because they protect you and you protect them. And this change, no administration is going to like it. And not even the Obama administration was that cool about this. And this present one will be even less cool. Going forwards, I don't have a crystal ball. All I have is you. And all we have is us and our good ideas going forward. As far as us versus the CIA, that's fairly terrifying.
How do we get the black man out of jail? What are the things that we can actually do? Because they're in jail and we're making money right now and we need to get them out at the very least.
Great question. And here's the best answer I have. Information. Information, 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 and hopefully advising young people about use. What's happening in some states now that cannabis has been decriminalized, now they're going after underage people for using because they can put them in jail. And so to me, it's public outreach, it's information, but of course, it leads to a bigger and bigger problem. My mother worked for health education and welfare under Johnson, under Joseph Califano in the 1860s when we were young. And her basic life goal was to make American public educational delivery systems deliver to people who would go to these schools. And I saw the breakdown in it because I went through the Washington, D.C. public school system. We didn't learn a damn thing compared to other schools I was forced into later on. And I think in this country, we are purposefully undereducated, so we fill battlefields and prisons more quickly. When you don't travel, when you can't find Libya on a map, but you hate them anyway, etc. When you can't find, you don't know where Benghazi is, you can't find Yemen on a map, and you don't have a passport, and you don't travel, you can be talked into almost any damn thing. When you don't have an education, prison or a battlefield is a very viable, it's not a probable outcome, but it's a very possible outcome. How do you keep minorities out of prison? You got to educate as many people as you can. One of my heroes, Chuck D of Public Enemy, he always says, each one, teach one. And that's one of the things I try and do because I heard it first from Chuck. And that is my answer. Education, information. And as you grow your businesses, you give out information to the people in your community. It starts locally and goes out from there. Past that, you need to tell the American government to stop doing everything the way it's doing and do it a different way, which I've been trying, you've been trying, lots of people have been trying, even presidents try, and in my opinion, they fail because the money does not favor equality or emancipation, never has.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Shark Sessions from the Marijuana Show. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Just say no.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs. Use less
I am
drugs.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
As a follower of the marijuana law reform movement, you have to develop an appreciation for the outrageous hypocrisy some supporters of marijuana prohibition are able to exhibit without their heads exploding from sheer cognitive dissonance. Take the commissioner of the National Football League and Tom Brady's biggest fan, Roger Goodell. On a sports radio show last week, the commissioner said he might be open to players using medical marijuana where it's legal, but he's worried that non-medical use could, quote, be negative to the health of our players, end quote. Look, if you spend your working hours running full speed into other large men running full speed, all your use of marijuana is medical. Regardless, how can Roger Goodell, with a straight face, say marijuana, quote, does have an addictive nature and, quote, may not be healthy for the players long term, end quote, when he's got team doctors pumping players full of highly addictive opioid painkillers proven to be harmful over the long term? Tellingly, for Goodell, it isn't really even about the health of the players, but the health of the $13 billion exempt from antitrust laws nonprofit organization he's paid $35 million annually to run. He explained, quote, I want to make sure that the negative consequences aren't something that we'll be held accountable for some years down the road, end quote. This is a man who heads a league that fought for years to avoid accountability for the brain damage it causes its players. Now he's worried that the league would be on the hook for players using the one medicine that helps prevent and repair that brain damage? Speaking of large men and opiates, New Jersey governor and chairman of the redundantly named Conservatives Club, Chris Christie, spoke yesterday in Princeton against the legalization of marijuana, citing the opioid epidemic ravaging our nation. Christie bellowed, quote, this is beyond stupidity. We are in the midst of the public health crisis on opiates, but people are saying pot's okay? This is nothing more than crazy liberals who want to say everything's okay, end quote. Now, the very same day, those crazy liberals at the National Institute on Drug Abuse, whose motto is, telling you marijuana is not medicine since 1971,
NIDA posted that, quote, medical marijuana products may have a role in reducing the use of opioids needed to control pain, end quote. Christie, it should be noted, is heading up President Trump's Blue Ribbon Task Force on dealing with the opiate epidemic. While NIDA is declaring that studies show access to marijuana leads to, quote, reduction in overdose deaths, lower levels of opioid prescribing, lower non-medical prescription opioid use, and lower prescription opioid use disorders, end quote, Christie is telling people that teens who try marijuana are 10 times more likely to become addicted to heroin. Oh, how the prohibitionists so desperately want that debunked gateway theory to be true. Attorney General and doubly traitor-named Keebler elf Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III flat out said, quote, it is false that marijuana use doesn't lead people to more drug use, end quote. And back in February, he said, quote, I see a line in the Washington Post today that I remember from the 80s. Marijuana is a cure for opiate abuse. Give me a break. I doubt that's true. Maybe science will prove I'm wrong, end quote. Well, science is proving he is wrong, but these guys can never admit it. What prohibitionists like Sessions and Christie are remembering from the 1980s is the old crack baby playbook. People, by and large, aren't that afraid of marijuana. So this strategy goes, you got to get them more afraid of the more dangerous drug and then link it to marijuana. In the 1980s, it was crack cocaine, which the late journalist Gary Webb and former crack kingpin Freeway Ricky Ross allege was covertly pumped into the inner cities by the CIA to raise funds for black ops in Central America. Today, it's the opiate painkillers, which have been overtly pumped into pharmacies nationwide, enabled by the DEA, hawked by corrupted doctors, promoted on television, all to raise profits for the pharmaceutical companies. Cocaine and marijuana were linked in the party culture. I mean, just look at a High Times magazine between 1978 to 1981. So when Coke started taking lives, marijuana's support plummeted. And interestingly enough, there's a very long list of those pharmaceutical companies that are headquartered in Chris Christie's home state. The health industry donated over $100,000 to Jeff Sessions, and pharmaceutical companies increased their buys of $300,000 to $700,000 30-second commercials on Roger Goodell's NFL telecasts. Unfortunately for Goodell, Christie, and Sessions, unlike the 1980s, we now have the internet, and the old reefer madness playbooks of the past don't work as well anymore. Witness what a bunch of parents did, armed only with Facebook and Dr. Sanjay Gupta's weed special, for spreading the use of cannabidiol oil across the most reticent states to adopt any marijuana reform. In 2013, just 4 years ago, there were still 30 states lacking any form of legal marijuana use. Today, there are only 5. Well, despite their bluster, these men aren't idiots. They can read the polls showing that there's over 60% support for adult use and over 90% support for medical use. What they're doing is a tactic Goodell's NFL teams know well, running out the clock when you have a lead. They know if they can delay and retard the development of whole plant medical marijuana and home grow legalization, eventually, their funders in Big Pharma will have jumped their pharmaceutical cannabinoid products through the regulatory hoops so they can profit from the growing recognition of cannabis as medicine. That's all the time we've got for the podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You say you're sweet, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you